Hi there, David. How are you today?
I'm fine. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, thank you. Appreciate you making some time for us again.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, I love the book. Finished it up last night, and I know I had a great time reconnecting with Travis Devine. What made you want to spend more time with him?
He's a character that I just feel has a lot of fuel in the tank left. And I started out with him, the 620 man, and I sort of built him to sort of be dropped in any place in the world, and to see if he could ferret out the truth and figure it out, and also survive at the same time. And he just has that ability about him. But you know, he's a very physical guy, trained as an Army Ranger, so he can do all of that stuff. But he's also a human being, and this showed, you know, I think the softer, more human side of him, and many elements, people he meets in the small town, and the things he has to go through, and it just was a different side of him. And so I bring characters back because I feel they have more room to evolve, and they have more things to show the readers. I think Devine definitely has a lot left.
As a writer, what's the advantage of working with a well-known pre-existing character?
Well, for one thing, you know, I don't have to go out and reinvent, you know, a character every single time. Mm. I can come back to him, you know, give a little bit of a pass so the readers who might not have read previous books understand the character. But at the same time, then I've got this template of a character, and then I could start. It's almost like a painting where you can, you know, you're trying to fill out all the corners and all the rest of the hues and every angle to this character. So for him, he's kind of an unfinished sort of thing right now, and with each book that I write about him, I can finish out more and more of him to let people get into his head, into what he's all about, what he's thinking, believing, feeling, what he wants out of life. And every book, I have an opportunity to take another swipe at him and to make him more clear to the reader.
Now, do you find you also have to go back and check some of the background and make sure that you're consistent with what you've told us about him in the past?
Absolutely. I do that with all the books. Some of the ones I've written 7, 8, 9 different books about, there's a lot of ground to cover. So I try to keep notes on different things as I go forward, but I do go back and reread because I want to be consistent, because if I'm not, I will get emails from people that say, hey, you know, in this book you said this, and blah, blah, blah. So I try hard. You know, I'm only human. I'm sure that I make mistakes along the way, but I try hard not to make mistakes.
Well, you drop Travis into the little town of Putnam, Maine, and for those of us in Maine certainly recognize a number of people and a number of situations, and really, in a lot of ways, Putnam becomes a character in the story.
It does. I've been all over Maine. You know, my cousin John was a governor up there for a while and a congressman as well. When my kids were little, we would take them to Ogunquit and the Wells. We had some friends who had a beach house up there. My wife's grandparents are French-Canadian. They lived in Madawaska and up at Fort Kent. So I've gone up all the way up, as high as you can go, where, you know, the sign says, get off of 95, it's ending. And then get off of Route 1, it's ending. And you keep driving. So, and I was up in Maine this year in Kennebunkport for a fundraiser for the public library system. And last year I was up there for another fundraiser that I gave. And it really, I hadn't been to Maine for a few years, and I got really re-energized about Maine. I just hadn't been there and seeing the place, seeing the ocean, seeing the towns. And when I was thinking about the new Travis Devine book, I was like, you know, you got a fresh look at Maine again. Let's do Maine, because I wanted a rugged, isolated place in the wintertime, small town near the coast, and it fit all those elements. And I named it Putnam. Because when we first went up to Maine and we would rent a house on the beach up there, we rented from a family called the Putnams. So I was like, okay, I like that name, so I'm going to create a town. I'm going to call it Putnam, Maine.
That's perfect. And I love the line, because it applies, well, to the ocean, but to Putnam and to a lot of places in Maine. The ocean always has surprises in store for you.
It absolutely does. I mean, small town, you know, people think, well, the big city is complicated and so many millions of people, teeming souls there. I said, well, they've got nothing on small town. Small town secrets are hidden really, really well. No, I'm not talking about it. It doesn't have to do with the quantity. It has to do with the quality of the secrets. And I would put small towns up against anything out there. And Putnam has more than its share.
We're talking with David Baldacci about his brand new book, The Edge, a 620 man thriller. So many great characters in the book, too. Jenny Silkwell, and I don't want to give away too much, but a great character, CIA operative, and when Travis digs into her past, he learns a number of things. She's not very easy to work with, and yet I think he describes her as the perfect formula for an ops officer.
Yeah, it really is. She's indomitable. She's relentless. She doesn't, suffer fools gladly. And for her, it's all about mission success at the end of the day, and she will do whatever she has to do to get to that end result. She pushes people the wrong way, and she doesn't really care because that's not her problem. And that does make her a great case manager, because you have to be relentless and you have to be indomitable, and you have to. And there's always going to be challenges, and you have to push through every single one of them. And that's who she was. Interesting about Jenny is, we never see her on the page alive. Everything we learn about her is posthumously. But she was a very important character in the book in any number of ways, particularly with the connection to the siblings she left behind, Dak and Alex. So she's very much front and center in this novel, even though she's dead by the time we meet her.
I love the character of Earl. We've all met Earl if you've spent any time in Maine. He is a great slice of coastal Maine.
He really is. I just wanted to make sure that people understood that, because I've met many Earls in my life as well. A man of the sea who sees the way he spent his life disappearing, and knows that generations coming up are not going to be able to have that opportunity, that advantage, for lots of different reasons. He's led a tough life, but he's led one of honor and dignity. Never made a whole lot of money, but raised a family, had a wonderful marriage, but now suffered a lot of personal losses, and things are coming to home now, and the past is coming back. And, we all have those types of things in our lives. It may not be as dramatic as what I write about in the ads, but we've all had stuff that we've done that we regret and that we feel guilty about and that we fear maybe might come back someday to haunt us. That's just part of being human. I've never met a perfect human. I don't think I would want to. I would take somebody who's fallen and failed over someone who's absolutely perfect, because I couldn't stand being around a person.
Yeah, but to me, that's, as a reader, that's what makes your characters so great and so believable, because there are no black and white characters, much like there are no black and white people. There are so many shades of gray.
There really are, and that's what makes people fascinating. I mean, that's the sweet spot right there about what makes us as human beings is fascinating, because you could have someone who seems like a really nice person and is a nice person, but have an element to them that, they did something once or twice that was not good, and they feel guilty about it, but they also try to keep moving forward because they don't want to revisit it. They maybe don't want to suffer the consequences for it, but that might heighten their guilt. So there's just emotional whiplash throughout a lot of different people. And again, we can all relate to that because, it's happened to all of us in varying degrees, and that's what makes human beings fascinating. We're not static at all. We're always evolving, and things are never what they seem.
You are so prolific, and I was thinking about this last night. I feel like you and the guy who owns our station, Stephen King, you guys are like McCartney and Jagger. You keep doing it and doing it at a high level, and I feel like it must be in your nature that you couldn't really ever just sit back and not do what you do.
No, I mean, you look at a guy like Stephen King, what an incredible career, an icon in the book field. I would imagine that if you told him he could never write any more stories, he would feel like somebody had just chucked him out of a spacecraft and he's floating through space with no oxygen, because that's who he identifies as. That's what he does. That's why he gets up every morning. And I feel the same way, that I'm at my unhappiest when I'm between stories. People talk about, well, I finished the book, I'm going to go take a break for like 6 months and not think about it. I'm like, I don't know. I'd be like, what am I going to do next? Because otherwise I have this enormous vacuum in my life, and vacuums are not good because sometimes they get filled up with bad stuff. So people say, when are you going to stop writing? And I said, well, when I'm all said and done, when it's over and they, put me in the ground, because otherwise there's no reason for me to walk away from something that I identify as.
Well, the other thing that you have done so well along with your wife, Michelle, is to do good works and help others all around the country. The Wish You Well Foundation has done such a tremendous job. And I was reading on the website, and I'm stunned to read this, that over 130 million people struggle with the ability to read in this country.
Yeah, they do. And the problem's only getting worse. I mean, you look across the country now, and reading scores are plummeting for kids all across the spectrum, all across every state. And I think a part of it is, we don't put enough money into education and to literacy. We just assume that it'll happen. But literacy dominates our lives. It will determine how successful we're going to be, how much we will earn during the course of our lives, how good the lives will be of our children or not, whether we're going to be homeless or hungry or impoverished or criminal, because literacy is tied to all of those social ills. And if we could eradicate illiteracy, most of those social ills would completely go away, which would be priceless, I would think. But our other problem is that people don't read books anymore. You know, they don't read nearly at the level they used to. We have a small, compact number of people who read consistently, but most people, by and large, do not read books anymore. Social media is narrowing their attention span, so people have a difficult time absorbing one page, much less 400 pages in the novel. So they get lost on TikTok feeds or Instagram, and that's where their attention span ends. And our brains are built for the long haul. They're built for doing long-haul duty, where, you know, we get better at stuff the more we think about it. We are not built. We make really bad decisions, and we make decisions fast based on really, really narrow evidence. But that's where our society is going these days, unfortunately. So Wish You Well Foundation, we fund as many programs as we can. We pour millions of dollars into this because, in a way, every dollar we put in, we're going to get $10,000 back in return as far as the impact positively on human beings.
Well, I applaud the work you do. I've been a high school teacher for more than 30 years, and there's no greater determinant than future success or failure in school than seeing those kids who come in early grades and beyond and struggle with reading. Because if you don't have that mastered, you have difficulty with every other area of your education.
You're absolutely right, and I applaud you because you have one of the most important jobs in the world because you're actually teaching future generations. But you're absolutely right. That one skill, if you lack it, it doesn't really matter what other skills you have in life. You're never going to be make up for that deficit, and it's going to impact every element of your life going forward and your kids' lives going forward, too, because if you're illiterate or your literacy challenges, chances are almost 95% that your kids are going to suffer the same fate.
And the wonderful work you do partnering with Feeding America, with Feeding Body and Mind, helping get books to food banks, and that important connection that you've made and the idea that undernourished minds go hand in hand often with empty bellies.
They do. I mean, illiteracy and poverty are very closely tied together. So if you're literacy challenged, chances are you seek food assistance as well. And what we try to do is people going to seek food and bring food home they need to survive to eat. We can stimulate and feed their mind at the same time they can bring books home. I've never seen a bad result from a book being in a home. I've seen many bad results from no books being in a home. And there are too many homes across this country that never had a book cross its threshold, which is very, very sad, obviously. If we could just turn that one thing around in this country, we would have a far better country.
Well, thanks for all the wonderful work you and Michelle and everybody in the foundation do. And thanks again for another terrific read, The Edge, a 620-man thriller. If you loved Travis Devine, he's back, and you'll love the story set right here in the state of Maine. David Baldacci, great to talk with you again. Thanks for making time for us.
Thank you. I always enjoy it. I appreciate it very much for the opportunity.